शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसनि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
This devotional service is a sort of cultivation. It is not simply inaction for people who like to be inactive or devote their time to silent meditation. There are many methods for people who want this, but cultivation of Krishna consciousness is different. The particular word used by Srila Rupa Goswami in this connection is anushilana, or cultivation by following the predecessor teachers, acharyas. As soon as we say cultivation, we must refer to activity. Without activity, consciousness alone cannot help us. All activities may be divided into two classes. One class may be for achieving a certain goal, and the other may be for avoiding some unfavorable circumstance. In Sanskrit, these activities are called pravritti and nivritti, positive and negative action. There are many examples of negative action. For instance, a diseased person has to be cautious and take medicine in order to avoid some unfavorable illness. So he's bringing out the point is that Krishna consciousness is defined as cultivation or activity. So this cultivation means that your emphasis is not on means the process is not the philosophy, right? And the process is not the goals being attained. Right? The process means that you're trying to do activities that will be pleasing to Krishna. So to do that, then you have to have the right goal, that the goal is for Krishna, and you have to have the right identity, that I am servant of Krishna. Right? Then it'll work. But the emphasis we can see is on abhideya. That's what makes the process special. Because abhideya becomes the prominent. You see in many others, then it is the result that you're trying to get from God. You're religious, therefore you're going to get a good result. Or because you're taking this up, you're getting absorbed in your philosophy and things like that, and then you'll be peaceful and, you know, all these different things like that also. But the emphasis on the process, that is special, we see in the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Specifically Vedic in general, but specifically the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, is that the activity means the activity is also spiritual. It's not something you do to get a spiritual result. It itself is spiritual. Right? Those who are cultivating spiritual life and executing devotional service are always engaged in activity. Such activity can be performed with the body or with the mind. Thinking, feeling, and willing are all activities of the mind. And when we will to do something, the activity comes to be manifest by the gross bodily senses. Thus, in our mental activities, we should always try to think of Krishna and try to plan how to please Him, following in the footsteps of the great acharyas and the personal spiritual master. Right. So now he's saying these activities, this means you're doing any activity will give you a result. So that would mean then the result of this can either, as we mentioned, is be pravritti or nivritti. It means you're trying to do something that is avoiding some problem or is getting something, useful. Right? Does that make sense? So you're doing an activity to avoid something or doing an activity to gain something. So that will always be there. Now, in doing these activities, then he's bringing in done with the body or with the mind. So mind is thinking, feeling, and willing. So thinking means that you are contemplating it, seeing your relationship to it, if it has any connection with you, is it something interesting that you would want? Feeling means that there's a need, you would like to have this thing, and therefore you're willing to make an endeavor, right? That's willing. You'll make the endeavor to become Krishna conscious, right? Does that make sense? Right. So at that point, then it becomes manifest as the gross body, right? means your when feeling is when feeling is prominent, that will come to willing, where then it will be manifest through the gross body. So the first two stages are within the mind. Right? So therefore, the service within the mind, thinking about Krishna, thinking about, you know, being interested, being excited about service, identifying yourself with Krishna, seeing how you can get nice results for Krishna, thinking about that, wanting to please Krishna. These are all activities then of the mind. Now when that becomes established, then the body will be engaged because it has the senses. Right? Does that make sense? But why there's an overlap that we say the mind is body, I mean thinking, feeling, and willing, is because the senses are controlled by the mind. Right? Unless, of course, you're into, you know, old zombie movies or something, then that's another thing. But if you're not looking at that element, then it's an overlap. So you won't say, okay, well, thinking and feeling, those are the mind, and then willing is the body. No, the body only moves because the mind wills it to. Otherwise, it doesn't. You understand? So they both go together. Yes? The difference between thinking and feeling. Thinking is within sambandha, feeling is prayojana. So thinking means you're going to be, it will include, means it will include understanding the field, what's right and wrong, the elements of the field, what is the relationship between the elements of the field, how they relate to each other in getting a goal, what purposes they serve in gaining a goal, like that, what goal could be attained. You know, this is all the concepts, all the theories, all the science itself. Then, contemplating that, then one becomes interested or excited about being involved in that process to get the result. You know what I'm saying? So it's more, it's how you tell the difference is, it means, and so then feeling, when that's contemplated more, then it develops attachment. Right? So thinking means it's desire, interest, excitement, you know, a willingness, but like that. Feeling means an attachment, a need. Because thinking, being excited isn't enough to necessarily make you do it. You know, it'd be nice to do, but if it doesn't happen, life goes on. But if there's a need, then you have to do it. Right? So we see is that the thinking of the field, that's Sankarshan. So understanding that, then one gets interested in the aspect of that or excited about it, that's Prajumna. So that's desire. Right? So it's a combination of the intelligence and the mind. Right? Sankarshan is specifically the intelligence. You know, just only you're establishing what's the difference between things. Then Prajumna, though he's in control of the mind, but it's controlled and connected with the senses. So therefore, what could be connected? What, so the mind becomes interested and I could get this result, I could become happy. But when it comes to, then that moves to Prayojana. Notice that the interesting point here is very important to note when you're dealing with rasa, is that from Sambandha you've crossed over Abhideya to Prayojana. Right? Means the process we're going through is we're going Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. That's the logical science. But the point is this logical science is operated by the mind, not the intelligence. Right? Intelligence is involved, but the element of rasa, it's the mind that's prominent. So you've crossed Abhideya, which means applied intelligence. Does that make sense? So that would mean that your need is not based on intelligence. Does that make sense? If you are starting using your intelligence and contemplating fields that are intelligent to be contemplated, then your attachments will be based on proper things. But the process of attachment is not determined by it's good or not good. Does that make sense? That's why you contemplate good things. Right? Yes.
How much accepting and rejecting does on a certain basis?
Huh? how much accepting and rejecting means you're looking at the system, so the intelligence is going to make the difference between what's there. What you look at the field, you could see it in so many ways. You know, we could look at this whole place here. Okay, what are the prominent colors here? Like that. So we see basically green and red is what's prominent here. You know, and the red from more red to more of a browny red, you know, and the green from, you know, light to kind of dark green of the moss. And, you know what I'm saying? Those are the prominent colors in this area. But, you know, and so by looking at it that way, you wouldn't even, if I discussed that with somebody, yeah, I was sitting in a place and it was more, you know, greens and reds and all that, I could be anywhere. No one would get the idea that it was in a building. You understand? So therefore, what the mind, you know, from that field, what it's interested in is what is contemplated. But the predominance is still the intelligence, because you're seeing what's there, what are the fields, what it is. So, but you still have to accept what it is you want to gain, how you want to perceive the field, the overall concept of what it is you want to gain and all that. You know, that's why you come up with the concepts of goal-oriented, you know, this and that. But at this point, it's not goal-oriented. Means there's the concept, therefore you move through. You know, you are in a situation like this, you already have an idea, you move in that way. If you don't have an idea, you access the memory. Okay, in a place like this, what has happened before? You know, so it's a big open place, and that, pleasant, you know, it's not in the sun, it's not this, that, so it could be used for a class, or a kirtan, or like that. Does that make sense? You know, like that. And so, yeah. Then, from that, then the mind becomes a little bit more prominent in Prajumna, though it's still the intelligence, right, is being there, because now you're having to distinguish the field and what you want exactly in the field, and then how you would, you know, what would be the methods of going about getting it, so it's as contemplated. When you become attached to that concept, then that is predominantly the mind. The mind has accepted this, and now it needs it. Then there'll be action. Right? That's why it's so important, the identity. Because your attachment's going to be based on your identity. Right? And your identity is taken from the field. Or you could say the identity is the field, and then within that is part of the field. So if you identify yourself as a devotee, then that means whatever field is there is to be used in devotional service. Then you become inspired about how to use that field in devotional service. Then you get attached to the idea, therefore you act in Krishna consciousness. But if your identity isn't that strong as a devotee, you know, you're just trying to fit in, just trying to this and that, don't be too fanatic, don't be this and that, that means then what you'll be inspired about is also kind of going to be not so defined in Krishna consciousness. That means your attachments aren't going to be very defined, therefore your activities are not going to be very defined. You know what I'm saying? So that's why then if you want to be, then if you, because of this, you're not taking the great inspiration from Krishna consciousness, you're taking it more from the material element of the identity, though in one sense you don't try to make it prominent. But if you're going to be inspired, then you have to turn to persons who are going to make you inspired through that mundane process. So they will first try to establish within you a strong identity. You can do it, you have the ability, you just have to think it, you just, by thinking it, it automatically comes. All these different things which are all dealing with identity. Because otherwise then, you know, and because it's a mechanical process, it's based on mundanity, it's very easy to affect. Right? Of course, karma is involved, but it's much, and it's observable. Everything's observable, your results are observable, and they're yours. So easy to get inspired. That's what we've been doing for our unlimited lifetimes, is being inspired to do something for ourselves. So now that they create this new found material identity, then we feel inspired to do something. And then it even makes it more that your devotional identity doesn't quite fit into that, because it doesn't at all. Right? You take these modern self-help gurus, it technically it's nothing to do with devotional service at all. It's just dealing with pure illusionary activities. You know, how to get good results, feel good about yourself, get good results, you know, be dynamic in your actions, you know, to get very, you know, whatever kind of mundane results you want. Does that make sense? And because of that, therefore, you have to put the devotional understanding or the devotional identity a bit to the side. Right? Because you are making a distinction between the two. Right? We see Srila Prabhupada, he was expert in business, but it didn't change his identity. Just business, you make money. With money, you can take care of the family, make them Krishna conscious. With money, you can give donations for the preaching mission. Right? So it was part of his you know, his activities, his occupation. It doesn't change his who his identity is. You know, because identity technically is within the ashram side. That's the real identity. Right? Because that's your sadhana, that's where you uplift yourself. So that doesn't have to change to be good at material activities. Because God has being the creator of the material world, therefore, all success in the material world is still naturally connected to Him. Because what you're dealing with is Him, right? The action itself is going to be Him, the result's going to be Him. So how is it not connected? You know what I'm saying? That's the problem. If we think something's not connected, that's the illusion. That's actually the illusion, because there isn't anything that's not Krishna. So if you don't see it as Krishna, that's the illusion. Right? So then at that point the mind's prominent, then you act. So that's why it's important to see that your goals, your attachments are connected to Krishna. Then your actions will be connected to Krishna, because you're going to act according to your attachments. So if they're connected to Krishna, you'll do Krishna conscious activities. If they're not connected to Krishna, you won't do Krishna conscious activities. Does that make sense? Is it more prominent in the feeling? The prominent. That's what you are accepting and rejecting, but it hasn't come to your acceptance is a willingness, but it hasn't come to the point of it actually is. You've accepted that this is what it is, and that's what it's going to be. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, right. The question is based on that. Those two descriptions are given on the mind, but it's thinking, feeling, and willing, and also that it's accepts and rejects. So the question is just how those two go together. And is that in all three phases of thinking, feeling, willing, is it accepting, rejecting?
It's always going on, but you could probably, in other words, it's accepting things that it considers favorable and rejecting that which is not. So this concept of favorable devotional service is something that we always do. Just the problem is the service we render to ourselves, or what we value. So the mind is always accepting what it will consider favorable towards what results you want, what you consider will make you happy, the pravriti. And it rejects those things that it will get in the way, which is the nivriti. Right? So in identifying the field, you're accepting what aspects you want to work with, what you're not going to consider. Right? Because in all these things, we're looking at this place here. But over here, there's a little bit of pile of dirt over here. So how important is that for our consideration of the class? Right? So it's not involved there. It would be involved on the level of we're clean, so therefore we consider those things from there. Does that make sense? So that will be there. Then you become inspired because you've accepted something. So the other is more of a generic, but it's still, there's no feelings on the matter. There's an interest but no feeling. Then it becomes, you know, more dynamic. Right? More of that. Then that becomes even more, it becomes attachment. And then that becomes even more, it becomes activity. So we see its activity is actually the culmination of the whole process of the mind involving itself with the senses and the sense objects. So that's why he's saying cultivation, that devotional activities are the prominent element. Right? We decide that those are favorable and good if Krishna is happy. Right? Does that make sense? Like that? You had something to say? No. Okay. And this then should be defined according to the previous acharyas, following in their footsteps. That's why it's important, because going to the spiritual world means according to who you're following. Right? You follow Rupa Goswami, then you're going to go to Vrindavan. Right? You're following, how you say, Vishrakshena, you'll go to Vaikuntha. You know what I'm saying? You follow Indra, you go to the heavenly planets. Does that make sense? You know, you follow somebody else, you might end up, you know, in the hellish regions, like that. If they're on MTV, there's a good chance that's where you're going to end up, right? You know what I'm saying? So, like that, then... So if you follow the previous acharyas, you know, under the guidance of the spiritual master, that will get you then into that particular place. So you can't, it's not a matter of picking and choosing, because the Vaikuntha is not about, the spiritual world is not about us just enjoying ourselves. It's about the process of we pleasing Krishna. That's how we become happy. Right? That's why that is given. You water the root, the tree's leaves become happy. Otherwise we think, okay, I perform devotional service, I get rid of the material distress, I go to the spiritual world where everything's nice, there I'll be happy. It sounds good. And it, as a beginning inspiration, it's good because it is true. It is true. It's not just, you know, some advertisement, it's not just some mundane concept or this or that. But at the same time, if you analyze it, then the inspiration is one getting out of the material world. That means we see the material world as separate from Krishna. And we see that the distress coming from it is the distress that is coming due to our attachments to it that we can't fulfill. So that has an element, the underlying element of, you know, trying to remove the material element, which is technically is an illusion, it doesn't exist in the first place. You know what I'm saying? It's material energy, or inferior, it's the Bahiranga Shakti, but it's not illusion. We're the one in illusion. Right? So it's not a matter of we're trying to get out of the material, we're trying to get into the spiritual. And so then, okay, we get out of here, we go to the spiritual world, where everything's very nice and free from misery. Okay, so that's to confirm that it's worth going for. But at the same time, as you know, it makes us take up spirituality to get out of the material world. But then getting into the spiritual world, we'll be happy, yes, but what is the process that will be happy? Because otherwise we'll get there, it'll be nice, and we'll be happy. Sounds a bit more like the heavenly planets. You know what I'm saying? Because that's attachment, is me being happy. Which is okay in the beginning, because everybody is anyway going to try to be happy, but it's how you become happy. You understand? If your process of become happy is you do work, you become happy, that's not considered so good. Next better is you do work, you become happy, then you give part of that happiness or give all of that to Krishna. But the best is you work for Krishna's happiness, and then because he's happy, automatically you're happy. So then that's the natural thing of the spiritual world. So that's why you follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, because they know how to please Krishna. Otherwise, we're always doing our own thing. It's always about us. How are we going to go to... How will we be happy in the spiritual world? Because there, it's not about anybody but Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So that way, then, slowly, slowly, we start to make this differentiation in our mentality. But it's something we should know right in the beginning, otherwise we may develop these other habits and become very attached to them. Does that make sense? So, therefore, the point is the principle of how are you seeing the goal? Right? And that way, it's goal-oriented, and that it's for Krishna's pleasure. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, is that you may get benefit from it. That's not the problem. The problem is the benefit for you or is for Krishna? You know what I'm saying? The man works hard for the family, creates facility for him, but that same facility is comfortable for him. But he didn't create it for himself, he created it for the family. So you can't say, oh, well, you're enjoying all this yourself, you should live in the garage. You know what I'm saying? So that's why sometimes the element of the people are doing things and they'll get benefit from is sometimes taking too far. You're getting some benefits, so devotees can't even take prasad and enjoy prasad because that's sense gratification. But the point is you're appreciating Krishna. So that's engaging your senses in Krishna's service. So if you're not appreciating, you're not this, how is it service? It's simply on the platform of tattva that you've come in touch with Krishna's prasad, therefore you are purified. But as far as rasa, the relationship between you and the prasad, that's not very good. You know what I'm saying? If you had somebody, who was, a good friend and really cared about you, a well-wisher and everything, and then when you're around them, then you're always, no, I can't, no, I shouldn't laugh, no, I shouldn't, do all these things, that's bad, I shouldn't be happy in your company. Like the other guy is just relax. Right? So that's the whole point. Sometimes we take these too far because we're taking the good and bad of, austerity, penance, and charity, these things, that is the devotional service. No, devotional service is a cultivation. That means the mind, the emotions, the relationships. Otherwise, it would be, say, it's a practice. Right? Isn't it? We say devotional practice, but that's the practice within the cultivation. Right? The mind is there. It is the one doing all three aspects, thinking, feeling, and willing. But the body is engaged in the actual practice. And the mind is cultivating, but the body is practicing. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Okay. A Krishna conscious person. Oh, there are activities of the body, activities of the mind, activities of speech. A Krishna conscious person engages his words in preaching the glories of the Lord. This is called kirtana. And by his mind, a Krishna conscious person always thinks of the activities of the Lord. As he is speaking on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, or engaging in his various pastimes in Vrindavan with his devotees. In this way, one can always think of the activities and pastimes of the Lord. This is the mental culture of Krishna consciousness. Similarly, we can offer many services with our bodily activities, but all such activities must be in relation with Krishna. This relationship is established by connecting oneself with the bona fide spiritual master, who is the direct representative of Krishna in the disciplic succession. Therefore, the execution of Krishna conscious activities with the body should be directed by the spiritual master and then performed with faith. The connection with the spiritual master is called initiation. From the date of initiation by the spiritual master, the connection between Krishna and a person cultivating Krishna consciousness is established. Without initiation by a bona fide spiritual master, the actual connection with Krishna consciousness is never performed, because that's an important element of bhajana kriya, is that you have taken the point to come to the point of actually committing yourself to a personal relationship based on the spiritual platform. Right? Because otherwise you can see, what's the necessity? It's like, try to find a loophole. Chanting is above the rules, this and that. But the point is yes, the chanting is. That's definite. But are we? So that's the whole point, is that then it's seen that it's serious. Takes it very seriously. Just like a man and woman may have a relationship, but when they're married, then you say it's serious. Because of that commitment, that's the difference. Initiation means that commitment. Right? So that means then one is directed what activities to perform, and those are performed with faith. Right? That makes it very, very strong. So that's always, therefore, in the process, we're working towards that. Right? Like we see Srila Prabhupada was there, he met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he considered him his spiritual master. But to be able to work everything together with his, just newly formed, you know, family life, his business activities, all these different things. It actually took him 11 years before he got initiated. But his plan was always to come to that point. So these things can't be underestimated. They can't be turned into a dualistic, mundane concept that, you know, well, nobody's that advanced or this or that. These are all babblings of the mundane mind, right? And they are not fueled by faith, right? They're fueled by a lack of appreciation for authority. Right? Otherwise, where would they come from? Spiritual master is there. Someone is considered by the Vaishnava community to be, you know, representative of the line. What's the problem? The problem is we have a problem with authority. That's the actual problem. We try to make it look spiritual. We try to give philosophy, just like we have attached to us the mundane things. We try to make it look spiritual. Right? Does that make sense? But much of the time we simply say things, but we don't do anything. So we may say, this one's this, that one's that, but is that person actually surrendered? Is he really committed to his spiritual master? Does that make sense? That's the point. So it's through the cultivation that you can see. You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. You have an office, okay? And in the office there are, you know, so many workstations. Tons of workstations. And generally workstations are devised that everybody's desk and whatever it is, everybody else can see because you walk by, right? You have an aisle and then there's desks on both sides. And you can see what's there, what's on the table, what's on their screensaver or, you know, the desktop or whatever it is like this. Now, would anybody at that business have a problem if that man had a picture of his wife or family on his table or on his computer? Have you ever heard anywhere where that's a problem? Any business, any situation, any country. So why is it that in Krishna consciousness that technically, officially, your guru is supposed to be kept inside a trunk or a locker where no one can see him, and if you bring him out, that would be considered offensive to the, you know, sentiments of the Vaishnava community. So in this case, we haven't even come to subhuman level yet. Because all the subhumans of the world, except that if there's somebody very important to you, you can have the picture of them. Now, if you start going around and telling everybody, yeah, this is my family, they're the best family in the world, and no one else has got, then you can say the guy should shut up. But we can't make this distinction. That means a lack, either a lack of intelligence, a lack of means the mind is so dull or dead it can't appreciate sentiments, or it means a very well-established dislike of authority. Because otherwise, why would intelligent people come to that conclusion? It's a lack of acceptance of authority. Can you understand the principle? So otherwise, the point is everybody, you know, if you meet your friend, you say, oh, how's your family? You know, how's the wife and kids? How's, you know, is it a problem? Like that, or the guy tells you something about, you know, it's just part of your life. So if you accept them as people, you accept their life. So if you can't accept that they have a guru or who the guru is, or if they might bring up something and talk about them, yeah, last week, you know, I got an email from my guru, he said this, or, you know, I went to the program, or oh, he's coming in 2 weeks, and people can't handle that, then what does that mean? What would be the impetus? Yeah, deifying, so you put him at a distance so that you can actually separate your mundane activities and you're the lord of your mundane activities. In other words, you're basically doing that. But more specifically here is, the one thing, deification comes more because one can't distinguish between, one can't see how everything actually is coming from God. So anything good can come from God, anything bad can't be in any way connected. And because it's bad here, therefore they can't be connected. You know, or the mundane is separate from the spiritual. The mundane has, in other words, the mundane stands on its own. It has its own substance, its own authority, its own methods, its own everything, independent from God. Right? Therefore, the spiritual master couldn't really understand it because he's spiritual, not material. Krishna's not involved, so therefore we have other methods, other authorities that we can take shelter of. So that would be the one thing there. This would be a point if it was just, how you say, what's the technical term where you don't like authority? Independent, but it's like it's a common thing.
Anarchist,
not that kind of a thing. It's just like, you know, it means you have social issues with authority. Anti-establishment. I don't know. It's a thing. I guess it's just authority issues or stuff like that. There's a term that we generally use more, but it's, you know, just they can't accept authority. That's all. That's the basis of it. You understand? So that's why he's saying here, he's pointing this out, and this is in the introduction, that all this is based on, it has meaning only if it's favorable service, right? A cultivation of favorable service is following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. That's the full thing. If it's not following the footsteps of the previous acharyas, then how is it going to be devotional? Just because you say it's yukta vairagya doesn't mean that it's favorable. Doesn't mean that it's acceptable. Yes? Fear of relationships, yes. Yes, they control your life.
Yeah, but a relationship is based on, you can express, you know, your relationship is related and communicated.
Yes.
So it's not that, you know, it's written so that you can't express preference on this place. So is there a fear of not being able to communicate as well?
Not being able to communicate, I wouldn't say that would be there. That would be, you know, a reluctance or shyness and like that, but you would still have faith in the concept. There it's a matter of, yeah? Trust issues, yeah. There's trust issues. Because they don't trust that someone else would actually work for them. Because in their life, they're either one or both of their parents didn't work for them. Either they were dead, or they, you know, they were divorced, or they had a bad relationship. You know, brothers, sisters let them down. You know, other people at school let them down, friends. You know, like this, it just goes on and on. And so it just confirms more and more. So they actually have trust issues. So it's a matter of identity. So they feel they're only secure if they're in control. Right? So the more insecure someone is, the more they have to control. Right? In a general sense, you know, in a relationship. The more comfortable they are, the less they have to be in control. Because they have more trust. They have more... like that. It means you may have somebody trying to control because of they just, you know, the results they want, and they want to enjoy that and this and that, but it still comes back to an identity. Otherwise, it'd be like this. If it's, you take someone, let's say, like Hitler, he's definitely a bit of a control freak. You know, no one's going to not agree with that point. But if it was actually purely control for enjoyment and those kind of things, then why wouldn't he listen more to his generals who are practical? He's a good politician. He's a good orator. He's a good, philosopher, theoretician. But his generals are actually experienced and on the ground, you know, warfare. So why wouldn't he trust their judgment? But he doesn't at some point. So he starts to become more insecure. Maybe because there were maybe, I think, 15 or 17 attempts on his life. You know, all of them foiled, you know. So that might add something to it. And most of the time it was by his, you know, high authorities. Yes?
I read a report that described the possession of psychopath. They're common to such a 4% of people in the world who are psychopath. And that basic trait is the lack of empathy. They can't empathize. They feel no... sorrow, they feel no feelings for anybody else.
Oh, okay.
And because they because of that.
I think he liked his mother.
Because of that lack of empathy, generally, you may consider that people who have empathy are foolish. Is there a point that you can love with someone who's very troubled and likewise than you? So because you don't want to, you think people are foolish, therefore, eventually when you become an adult, you take advantage, because you can actually be very cold and calculated and get what you want, because you don't care about other people. So this is a kind of politeness that's going on. It's like you were saying, distrust or lack of, they don't just authority because they consider they are the only authority.
Mm-hmm.
And no one else, you know, has anything to say.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. No. It's nice. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, mental. Like that. Or it can be is maybe they can be empathetic, but because they allowed themselves to be open, and then they felt they got cheated or hurt. Therefore, then they'll in that way. So it won't be it won't be a natural lack of empathy, but it'll be a cultivated lack of empathy, like that. In other words, they use it to protect themselves. But in any case, as we see there, is that there was some problems that he couldn't work, because otherwise they gave him good advice. Most of the time, if he, you know, he would take their advice and he'd get good results. One time he didn't take their advice, one time he got a good result. But then he kept giving therefore his advice and then he lost everything. Like that. You know, so that was the problem, is that he would stop taking their advice. So it's something beyond just wanting to be, you know, the enjoyer. He's comfortable as the controller, so therefore he's not worried that people aren't going to do what he wants. And then they'll get good facility and he'll enjoy, but the others will also enjoy also. So it'll be a good situation for everybody. So there's no problem there, right? There's no lack of insecurity. So when there's a lack of security, then there'll be more the need of control. You know what I'm saying? Doesn't mean one's not careful in the world. You know, one's not naive, but it doesn't mean that one has a lack in the concept of authority. That has to be there. If that's not there, spiritual life will be slow until that's established, because you have to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. Right? And it starts with your guru. Yes? Throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I would say they also threw out the tub. You know, and possibly even the table that the tub was on. You know, like that. The point is they actually don't understand the process of Krishna consciousness. They don't actually understand what's spiritual. They don't understand that, a bug's crawling across the floor, and they can't see the actual spiritual elements of it that actually makes that possible. You know, they just see a bug. So here in case, they just see an authority. They're not seeing the spiritual process. Otherwise, it means spiritual process is always superior to a material process. Right? Because spiritual process is the origin of the material, because the material is simply the spiritual processes applied without understanding they're spiritual. Therefore, because of that, then all these other qualities come up that are unfavorable. You know what I'm saying? Because you identify yourself as servant of Krishna, therefore you become excited about doing things to please Krishna. And you perform devotional activities. But if you don't identify as Krishna, you will still get a mundane identity that will generate your enthusiasm, that will generate your needs, that then therefore generate the activity and result. It's the same process. There's not some other process. So what's happening is people actually think it's two different processes. Material world and spiritual are two different processes. It's one process. It's just, are you God conscious or are you not? Because if they say it's one process, they take the material and take it, extend it to the spiritual world. But it's the opposite. The spiritual world is extended here. This is a corner of the spiritual world, you know? Like that. But it's still it can be understood in that from that perspective. Otherwise, how do the those from the spiritual world come here and do everything so nicely? You know, how do they do it better than the people from here? Because they're fully conscious. They do it. They see its actual position. They see a connection to Krishna. But mechanically, it's the same process. How you pick up food, put it in your mouth in the spiritual world. You do the same thing here. You know what I'm saying? Except for, of course, if you're below a certain age, then somehow or another it's smeared all over your body and absorbs in the pores. But once you cross a certain age, somehow or another that process seems to stop working. No? Is that okay? Can you speak a little louder?
There are a lot of devotees that they'll accept as spiritual masters. Spiritual masters are fully surrounded to the interaction of the spiritual master.
Get a spiritual master, have a thing on the side. That's, it's not good, but it's okay as long as they accept the principle of authority. Because with time, by practice, they'll see that the directions given by the spiritual master are more important than their thing on the side. You know what I'm saying? In here, because that's just a matter of conditioning. That's going to be there. People are going to have their mundane needs and that, but their intention is spiritual, is devotional. So therefore, they follow the process, surrender the spiritual master, do what they can. So it's through practice that they make it better. Here we're talking about not understanding that devotional service and following the footsteps of the previous acharyas is non-different. It's synonymous. You can't separate them. You know what I'm saying? One doesn't function without the other. So if you're performing devotional service, means it's under the direction of the spiritual master. If you're working under the direction of the spiritual master, it means it's devotional service. So you can't say, I'll perform devotional service, but according to whatever I think. Devotional service, whatever you think, aren't connected. So it's not a proper, vyapti? The vyapti is not correct. Means your connection of the points, yourself, service, and whatever you think. Those aren't connected. You and what you think is connected, you know, and you and devotional service may be connected, but devotional service and what you think aren't connected. So it's not complete. Therefore, you end up with you performing devotional service at one point, and other points you do whatever you like. So, if that's theirs, but you see devotional service as following the footsteps of the acharyas, but you still connect yourself with the mundane due to conditioning, so it's kind of like you're doing two things at once. But you understand which is superior. But if you actually sincerely think that whatever you think is devotional service, it's philosophically wrong. It's logically wrong. It's not valid. It's not a valid thing, because just because you feel like it doesn't make it valid. You know what I'm saying? Is that okay? So that's what we're speaking on. In other words, there's going to be the practice of Krishna consciousness that isn't perfect, and that's why it's called sadhana bhakti. And then there's an appreciation or understanding of the fundamental tenets of our philosophy, that those, there's no question of them being adjusted. Right? You may have details that may adjust, you know, okay, your spiritual master 7 foot tall or 6 foot tall or 5 foot tall. That's a detail. You know what I'm saying? But the point is the thing of representing the parampara. And the point is that it's just like if we have a problem with, well, how could the spiritual master be spiritual if he's not, you know, on the topmost platform? That's fine, but then how is it that when, you know, any devotee speaks Krishna conscious philosophy, why is it spiritual? Right? Because you say, oh, Krishna's name is this and that. Sahajiyas also talk Krishna's name, saying Krishna's name is not spiritual. You go to, in South India, Guru Vayur. The worship is established by Shankaracharya. Everybody in the temple is devotees of Shankaracharya. They're pure, hardcore, 100% Mayavadis. But when they take the deity out on procession, they sing Hare Krishna. I'm not joking. They do Hare Krishna Kirtan. They sing Gita Govinda to the deity at every offering. Right? They do all kinds of wonderful devotional activities. You know, like that. But they're Mayavadis. You know, so it's devotional service, but it's not favorable. It means the activities are favorable, but the mentality is not. You know? But that's a unique temple. Other actual Mayavadi temple, there are no deities, nothing in this and that. You know, there is this something of Shiva or Shakti. You know, yeah. Does that make sense? Yes.
Is that temple established by
Shankaracharya? I don't think so. I think the worship was established. They even say in Jagannath Puri the worship's established by Shankaracharya. Because it's a tantric system, so it's a bit different from Pancharatra. But in Puri, the persons there running the worship are devotees. But in Guru Vayur, they're not devotees. They're Shankarites. There's a devotional element, but it's kind of like their process. You know, like in Zen, you could do flower arrangements or meditation, you know, or bow and arrow or martial art. You know, something you can do as a medium. So bhakti is their medium. But they're... That's your pastime, so then... Yeah, yeah, so it's your pastime, but how is it your pastime? Pastime means it's going by your desire and you're enjoying the whole thing. So when you walk out in the street and get hit by a rickshaw, then how are you enjoying this? Yeah, yeah. So that means we're all Radha Krishna. So, you know, how is it that, you know, how is it yours? So that means that I can take these deities. It's all one. Why are you complaining? Does that make sense? And so what was it? We started at a certain point. We get off on these tangents. But how do we get into Guru Vayur? Oh, okay, yeah, that was it. So that was the point we're trying to establish, is that the new bhakta is discussing Krishna conscious philosophy and making people into devotees. Why? Because what he speaks, it's just, the mundane tongue is moving the material air, which is going in the material ear, being processed by the material mind. So why is it having effect? Because that whole process is being empowered by the chit potency. So if that can be empowered, people can do all this wonderfully, why can't someone in the position of guru be empowered? They take it, no, he's doing it. But that's not our philosophy. That's why it's mundane. That's why it breaks down faith. That's why it doesn't work. It's a mundane concept. You're thinking, he's doing it. Then you're saying, he's the doer. So it's just a matter of, I'm the doer, and I don't want him being the doer. It's a matter of, it's the chit potency. So if someone is there, recognized, the Vaishnavas are appreciating, why won't it work? It works with the new bhakta. So if the new bhakta can do it, why can't the other? Because it comes as formal, no, but no, unless he's in the pastimes, you know, putting the flowers on the bed, then... You know, Nikunja, you know, Radhikeli Siddhai. But the point is that's what's going on. You know, so maybe others in the line, they're doing it, but you're assisting them. So down here, Prabhupada wanted something done. He wants Mayapur done. You're assisting in that, so you're assisting him. He's putting the flowers. So what's the problem? Flowers are going on the bed. You understand? But it's just these very dull-witted, thick-headed, you know, lack of trust, lack of faith in authority that creates all this, absolutely purely mundane considerations. That's the whole point. It's just mundane consideration. You know what I'm saying? So that's all. Okay. That was me. Does that make sense? So in other words, we can always have faith, always be inspired. That's the point. If the mission is there, the chit potency is there, it works. We just have to follow the process. We can't make it up. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi ki.